voice was the same exact voice that they gave bicycle safety course with in junior high. Remember that one voice? And this is how you use your helmet, kids, or something like that. That's exactly where we've been over the last several weeks. And now we're going to talk about, what does it mean if you actually would obsess over God? Well, what's it mean to obsess over God? Why would God want us to obsess? Well, it's because that which you obsess about is that which you become like. What you obsess about is that what you become like. It's what you worship. And as we talked about God here over the last several weeks, we've really seen that God has been an incredible God of empathy and sympathy, haven't we? I mean, we see God doing these incredible things like, you know, bringing people out of bondage and miraculously providing manna, bread to eat, miraculously providing water. And we just see that God takes care of his people and he gives and he understands where people are. But we can really be confused if we don't realize that just as God has empathy, he also has intensity. There's also an intense side to God. I was thinking about this, especially this last week. I've been helping coach my son's sixth grade football team, and it's been a somewhat frustrating experience for me. I don't know if you've ever done any coaching. I haven't done a heck of a lot of coaching with little kids, but especially not like kids who this is their first year they've ever done a sport like football before. It's been very interesting because, you know, most of these kids, they've done stuff like soccer or baseball and all that stuff, all good sports. But there's a very unique thing about football. Anybody who's played football knows that it is, maybe hockey's a similar way. I've never played hockey, but it is very unique in that there is a level of intensity that comes with the game and comes with practice that isn't associated all the time with other sports. So when you're on the practice field football, everybody who's ever played football knows you never walk on the field. You never walk. You always run or you jog. Everyone knows that if you're not involved, you sit there and you shut up and you stand and you keep your helmet on. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that you're not supposed to just sit unless you're specifically told you can sit. And then when you are told, you can take a knee at best. I guess it's as close as you can get. Everyone knows this who's played football except for sixth graders. They don't know any of this stuff. I mean, so they're walking, they're like, come on, run, run. They're like, you know, walking like that. And they're, you know, they're just, you know, not, I mean, they're just kind of thinking this is, you know, nice happy time. And this finally, this last week, I kind of snapped. I was watching this drill and there was these kind of two kids doing this blocking drill. And the kids who were sitting around watching, one of them specifically, somehow ended up on his face with his face mask planted in the grass. He was just like this, spread eagle, staring at the grass. And I said, hey, you here to play football or you here to kiss the grass? Oh, you play football? Like, put your tongue back in your mouth and get up off the grass. I didn't say the tongue part. I wish I would have hit that line. That was a great line. No, but I was exactly that intense. Exactly, because I realized that these kids are not getting the most experience. They need to have football-like intensity. And then not long after that, there was two great blocks. This kid just really had a perfect form block, which you rarely see. Put the kid on their back, and I just came unglued. I was like, oh, that's a great block! I said, Matt, get over here! Matt's like, come over here! I grabbed the space mask. That was an awesome block! That is an all great job! Great! You kept your feet moving, they were wider, good job! And it was like, you know, they're all like fired up like that. And you know, there's a certain amount of intensity that we need. And there is an intense aspect to God that we need. We don't need a God who is just sympathetic and just empathetic for us to elevate our spiritual game and for us to become who God would have us to become. There are times when he gets very intense with us. And today is going to be one of those times when God gets intense. And we're going to take a look in a bit, one of those passages in the Bible that some of us look at with enlightened American minds. We think, oh gosh, I just wish that wasn't there. I just wish that, because if that's what God is, I'm definitely not going to obsess over that God. I'll keep obsessing and fantasizing, worshiping the God of my own choosing, not that God. But let's pick up where we left off yesterday or last week with Moses. I'm going to take a brief look at Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19. And here's what it says. You yourselves have seen, this is God speaking, you yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possessions. Although the whole earth is mine, He says, oh, the whole earth is mine. Life, the universe, everything, everything is mine, but there's going to be a special place in my heart for you. And you need to realize, God says to these people, and he says the same as us. You realize how empathetic I've been. How I've covered you with eagle's wings. I've covered you. And actually, there's been an updraft from my wings. It's lifted you higher. And at some point, all of us have been able to identify that. Maybe we haven't noticed it was God, but at some point in our life, we realize that we have been so hurting, we have been so down and out, that the only reason we're standing, the only reason there's anything upward in our life is because God must be doing something for us to lift us to a different place. And this is what God is trying to remind the Israelites. Look at my history. Look at how I've given you bread. Look at how I've given you water. Look how I've given you freedom. Understand that that is what I'm about. I am about you. I'm about getting you to the place where you need to be. And God knows that one of the things that people need is they need to know what God wants from them. And so we come to this famous scene that you saw in the little clip there before when Moses goes up to Mount Sinai to get the Ten Commandments. He goes up there to get these Ten Commandments to get a picture of what it is that God wants all of the Israelites to do. And this was going to be for them, this was going to be a form of worship. It was going to be a form of worship. Now, what do I mean by say worship? As I said before, worship equates obsession. What it means is there is something that you completely and totally fixate. Everybody in here worships something. Nobody in here is not a worshiper. In fact, everybody in the entire planet is a worshiper. Everybody has one thing that they're obsessed about, one thing that is their precious, one thing through which all decisions filter through. And what God says is, I want to be that one thing. That thing, whatever it is, that is the thing that you worship. That is the thing that you give all of your stuff to. And see, when we think of worship, we think of it's a churchy word. We do. We think of the church where I think it's something where I come and sit here, and worship is something where I need to have so many songs, or I need to have a certain thing on the wall, or I need to have all these things. That's not worship. Well, it's part of worship, but it's not worship. Worship is the totality. Everything in my life being focused to something. Everything. When I was sitting up here doing those three songs, some of us were sitting and looking at those words and thinking, wow, do I think that about God? Is that who God is? I didn't know that was God. Some of us were there. Last three songs, I was actually singing those, and I was a form of worship, me saying those things to God. But I wasn't just worshiping there. I also worshiped at the end of that football practice. Get in the car, and I'm thinking to myself, thought across my mind, oh man, those kids have never seen that kind of intensity on the football field before, and especially those kids that have sort of got hit. They don't know. It was almost as if God was giving me these little thoughts, because I'm normally not Captain Empathy. Those of you who know me well, you know that. So I realized, man, those little guys that got put on their back, they might think that I was cheering their demise as opposed to cheering the great form of the others. And if they've never been around football, they wouldn't know any different. So I asked Jake, I said, hey, Jake, do you know who those kids were? I'm thinking, I want to call them. I'm going to call them and kind of describe it to him. He didn't know who they were because he was in a different part of the field. And the thinking of doing something like that, it's an act of worship because I'm saying, God, I want my intensity, whatever I'm doing on the football field, in a church service, wherever it is, I want it to point to you that you are my precious, that I am obsessed about you having everything in my life. And, it stayed with me until the next practice. So I asked the head coach if I could say something. I just had to explain to all the kids what exactly it means when you're intense as a football coach and you're not trying to cheer somebody who just got done bad. You're trying to give incredible encouragement to people who have done really well. And I really felt that that was an act of worship because God knew the intention of the heart. And that was done because I sensed that God wanted that to be done. That's what happens. What you worship is the thing that your whole life revolves around. And it's also the thing that you become. Interesting, that Lord of the Rings clip. Gollum got a new identity based on the thing that he worshiped. The thing that you worship is the thing that you will become. You ever notice that the longer people are married, they start to look like each other? You ever notice that? It's actually kind of scary. It really is. I mean, I don't know if anybody's ever done a study on that, but really, when I see somebody who's been married for 20, 30, 40 years, they look like each other. And I don't think it's because they look like each other when they date it, because I see a lot of people who date and get married and they don't look like each other at all. Really. I think there is some psychosomatic thing where people marry a long time, they start to look like each other. I mean, am I weird? Have you guys noticed this? Okay. I think that is a principle of worship. You know, when you focus on something or obsess about something, you become like it. Let's think about when you're dating. You know, forget about, you know, married. You're dating. What happens? When you're dating, you find that new hottie. What happens? You go buy clothes. Who do you buy clothes for? You buying them for you? No. Because you're going there going, oh, I wonder if I want, will she like me in these clothes? Will he like me in these clothes? You think about your clothes now because now your clothes are around that person. Your clothes buying is a form of worship. You go and you're on your email. You're going, I got it. And all of a sudden you go, oh, man, I got to go to 1-800-flowers.com. So you type in 1-800, you know, or 1-800-tools.com, you know, and you got to buy something special to that person. And you just naturally think about that person because they're your obsession. We have these phrases like, you know, I worship the ground he walks on, or I worship the ground she walks on. All of these things tie into this idea that all of us understand worship. It's just very few of us worship God. Very few of us say, at the pinnacle of all of my life, God, at the center of all of my life, at the common ground, the foundation of all my life is you. You are my obsession. You are my worship. Every decision, every passion will be filtered through that. So God brings them back. 10 commandments, 10 basic instructions, the first top 10 list that was ever given. And then people understand, okay, these are the kind of things. When I do these things, I communicate to God that he's my obsession. I communicate to God that I want to worship him. There's all these instructions God gives. And I'm convinced that if you take a look at all these instructions, there's way more than 10, by the way. I'm convinced when you take a look at all these instructions, it's not that God really wants to give out a checklist. God is just trying to show an intimate detail that when he is your obsession, when he is what you worship, it affects everything in life. There's no work life. There's no family life. There's no workout life. There's no spiritual life. There's just life. And as soon as we try to divide those up, we're trying to say, God, I'm going to put you here, but not here, here, but not here. And God says, no, the whole thing. Everything you do is a reflection of what you think about me and whether or not you want me in your life. All of us need this. All of us have something to worship, and all of us need something to worship. We need something to obsess about. This is what happens with the Israelites. Moses goes up on Mount Sinai. He goes up to get these 10 commandments. He's up there for a while, and the people start to get a little nervous. And so let's pick up this story. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't even know what's happened to him. I love this. This is great. You understand what's happening here? People are like, hey, Moses, he's our spirituality. He's the one who brought us up. And now he's up in Sinai. We haven't seen him for a while. And now what do we need? We need a god. We need, all of us need a god. You say, well, not really, because I'm an atheist. Or I know a friend who's an atheist. No, everyone has a god, and your god is your obsession. It's the thing you worship. And if you're an atheist, it might be that your god is being intellectually sharp enough and strong enough that you don't need a quote-unquote crutch. And that is your precious, that you are self-sufficient, that you don't... What are you doing here? I'm sorry. That's a great friend of mine I haven't seen in 3 years. I just... or 2 years. Thank you. Afterwards, okay? I actually do make eye contact. See, if you see, I actually do make contact. From Japan! My goodness. Okay, where was I? Where was I now? Atheist! There you go. Thank you very much. Atheist. You know, what happens is oftentimes, it's my obsession, my worship, is that I am all that. I can think this through, I can now philosophize, and I don't need a quote-unquote... All of us have something, and these people need something. And now Moses, their spiritual guru, is gone. I love this. As for this fellow Moses, this guy who did something or other, like this fellow Moses, how quickly the mighty have fallen, huh? Moses is out of the scene for just a little bit, and all of a sudden, who cares? Moses, Schmoses. We don't care what's happened to him. All we know is we need a god. And Aaron... Aaron, his sidekick, he's weak. He says, okay, you need a God. I'll deal with this. I'll do this for you. Here's what I'm going to do. Everybody get all the gold you can. Get your earrings out. Get all your stuff out. Give me all your gold and I will create a God for you, because I understand what it's like not to have a God. We all need a God. We all need something we look at and bow down and say, this is my precious. So go ahead and you all do this. And here's what happens next. He took what they handed him and he made it into an idol, cast it in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. And then they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. That's amazing. He goes and he takes all of this stuff and he creates a golden calf right there. Creates a golden calf, golden cow, puts that right there and says, these are your gods, Israel. This is what's really done the whole thing. Now, we don't know exactly why it was a golden calf. Why did he choose to do a golden calf? Is it that was his third grade art project, so now he knows how he can do calves. We don't know exactly, you know, why he did a calf. Some people said that calves, cows, livestock were all gods in ancient religions. And so maybe the Israelites just wanted to be like everybody else in their god. Some people have said that this is a god in Egypt, the fertility god, the bull god, which is a fertility god. And maybe the Israelites are like, who cares about that god? Let's go back to the God that we understood when we were in bondage under Egypt. It's not really important to know what it is. The important thing is that everybody needs a God, and they wanted to create one. By the way, the greatest gods are not those gods that are created, but it is the Creator. You can create a God. You can create something, but it only comes from you, so it doesn't have a lot of power. This is just a golden hunk. It doesn't have any power. The difference between worshiping something that is created versus the Creator, the real God, God of life, God of the universe, God of everything. And so Moses comes down from Mount Sinai finally, and here's what happened. So Moses approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing. His anger burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. So Moses comes down from this place. He looks down and he sees something that completely ticks him off. He takes these tablets. They smash these tablets, symbolizing all these rules, all these instructions, all these principles of how to obsess about God. You've broken them. They're done. It's over. I'm ticked off about this, and you've just obliterated all of these. One of God's top 10 lists was, have no gods before me. Well, they just put one before him. Another top 10 list was, have no idol. Have no object that you worship. And Moses is entirely ticked off. What's he ticked off by though? Some of us are going, oh no, this could be really bad because I've got a little gold calf that I have on my end table, and I like better get home and burn that real fast because this is, you know, you might have a gold calf in your house, and there's no problem with that at all. No problem with gold, no problem with gold calves. What was the problem? The problem was he saw the people dancing around it. That was the problem. Because that which you dance about is that which you worship. Whatever makes you dance makes you worship. When we, you know, we have something inside of us. We go, oh, I've got to, I'm so passionate about this, or I feel so good about this. It's just natural, you know, to shake ourselves like a Polaroid, you know. It's just very natural. Last week I was, you know, watching PBS. Unfortunately, I was watching PBS because our crazy campaign commitment, one of the things was it dropped out kind of money for cable for channels above 14 or whatever it was, you know. So, you know, all of a sudden we find ourselves watching PBS a lot, you know, because the stuff we like to watch ain't there. So we're like, so we're watching PBS this last week, and I'm glad, by the way. I'm glad because we watched 70s Soul last week on PBS. Everybody saw that. Anyone see that? That was sweet. They had like all these 70s Soul bands, like the Stylistics, you know, and they, it was like a fundraiser, and they had the Stylistics going, God made you! You know, the whole thing. And that thing is going on, and Libby and I are watching it. I'm like, you want to dance? Yes, I do. So we find ourselves up. We're in the middle of our living room doing the song. You make me feel brand new. Yeah, we're doing this whole thing like this, just kind of going. And it was awesome. It was so natural. Because when you love someone, dance with them is great. I don't have a problem tomorrow night because I'm fired up about watching the Bengals, and I found out they're on ESPN. Dag! I don't get ESPN anymore. I don't get ESPN. You know, I wanted to watch U.S. Open a couple weeks ago, and it was on USA, and I couldn't watch Federer and Agassi, and so I had to figure something else out. And I have to rethink this, because I ended up going to BW3 to watch it, and I ended up spending about 5 months' worth of cable bill watching it at BW3. But so I'm going to find out someplace to watch it tomorrow night. But, you know, when I watch Chad Johnson, if he scores a touchdown, what am I going to do? I'm going to be sitting there and go, yes, yes. I'm going to be sitting there and go, yes, yes. It's a form of dancing. It's a form of dancing. Remember this place. When we bid on this place, it was in bankruptcy court, and I and a couple of the people went down to Wall Street, and I was two levels beneath street level. And when we got there, it was a miraculous thing. I don't have time to go into it now, but it was utterly miraculous. And I came up out of the kind of doldrums up in the lobby area. I remember there was a dance I was doing. I remember I was on the cell phone trying to call people, and I just remember I kept going like this. I just kept going back and forth. I couldn't stay still, and I was just so amazed and weeping and blown away by what had happened. It was a form of a dance. What moves you is what you are fired up about, and it causes you to move your feet. And that thing, those things are things that we become like. And some of us think, well, you know, I don't have a golden calf. That's not something that that I worship. Well, maybe there's other things. Maybe there's Elvis you worship. Maybe there's Elvis. We could put. I mean, actually, why was Elvis so controversial? It wasn't his music. It was because he would dance, and people got freaked out. Oh, you know, he's dancing. This could be Jeff Gordon. This could be Britney Spears. This could be Chad Johnson. It could be. You ever notice that most of us have no problem giving an emotional response to a sports figure or a celebrity or an artist? When's the last time God got an emotional response from you? When's that last time? And I'm not trying to guilt anybody. I'm just saying that when you obsess or worship something, it gets a response from you, and it's natural. You don't have to conjure it up. It just something comes from the core of you because it or he or that or she is your precious. Here's a golden calf, potentially. American flag. Follow me here. Is there anything wrong with Elvis? No. Anything wrong with a golden calf? No. Anything wrong with the American flag or America? No. I hope not anyway. I like my country. I love my country. I'd kill somebody for my country. Some people like to say die, but you know, I'd kill somebody for my country in the right situation. So please understand that for that. But there's a lot of people that worship this more than God. I know a lot of Christians who worship this more than God. They call this a Christian nation. Nations are not Christian. Nations are not, flags are not Christian. People are Christ's followers. People are Christ's followers. And if you're not able to look at our own country and see the faults in our country, see the shortcomings in your political views and all that stuff, it might be because you are so obsessed with your political spin on what the country needs to be about and what this whole thing, that this could be your golden calf. You know, there's something wrong if whenever you're in a football stadium, you know, and you hear, and I'm proud to be an American, and ethnic scenes fly over, and you're, but God never gets that kind of response from you. This is wrong to cry to the flag and all that stuff. I am saying is, you're dancing around that thing. You guys, have I ever danced around for God? Has there ever been something deep inside of me? It's, oh, it's going to be a golden calf. It's going to be, that's a whole series. I'll do that sometime. Here's another one. Right there. Yeah. Now tell me, do these jeans make my butt look big? That's not right now. I'm just curious. Now what is this? This is, now look at all you people. Don't look there. What are you looking at there? Look at, you know, what is this? This is my self-image. It's my image. It's my self-image. This is what I want everybody else to see. And for many of us, this is what we worship. This is what we obsess about. Do people see me the way I want them to see me? You know, as I'm speaking, I have to say, am I saying something to be helpful, or am I saying something to draw attention to myself? Where do we see mirrors? I need that size 6. I gotta have that size. I'm obsessed. I will do anything. I will eat anything. Careful now. I will throw up anything to have that size 6. That's what I obsess about. You know, we're lifting weights, looking in the mirror. Don't we do the kind of dance if you're kind of. It's a form of dance. It's a form of worship. Something that we were, oh, see, all these things, we don't even think about that. We don't think, oh, I strut in front of the mirror like it naturally happens because we're obsessed. What you love is what you worship. What you love is what you obsess about. Wall Street Journal. Money. Money. You know, we used to have in the program last week's offering. We did that just to show that we're trying to be above board on everything. We wanted to make sure people realize we're above board. And then we'd taken it out. We might put it back in sometime. But we took it out for a while. And you know the reason? Is we found that too many people were obsessing over that. We found that people came in, and it was actually demotivating some people to give, which is important for us to be able to touch lives around here. Because they thought, oh gosh, that number's like so poof. When it's really a misnomer, because we had one guy went away to his parents' church, a little country church, had like 50 people, and he thought this saw this little offering number, and then he realized, oh man, that little offering number and this little people, that's actually a huge number versus the math I do in my head about that number that I see in the Crossroads program in our place. It's one of the reasons we took it. The other reason is because many people was a form of worship. Come in here and you take a look at what's that number, and you'd fixate on that, and you wouldn't hear anything else because you're just fixated on that. And this is what money does to us. It can be, not for everyone, but it can be. This is what I worship. It's when I get excited. When do I get the downest of the downs? When the stock market plunges. When I get the uppest of the, I got a raise. I got that, you know. And again, we naturally worship that which we love. We naturally obsess over that. And on top of that, that is what we become. We become those things. We become green in the eyes. We become patriotic. We become, you know, Elvis t-shirt wearing people, whatever. We become those things. One more. Here's one. Crossroads. A lot of people worship Crossroads. You know, if I haven't been to Crossroads, I feel like I haven't been with God. You know, well, hopefully Crossroads helps people get to God, but there's a big difference between being fired up about Crossroads and being fired up about Christ. It's a huge, huge, huge difference. And if you're feeling like, man, I really can't know God unless I'm in an auditorium at 3500 Madison, and God doesn't go through your mind and you're not growing with Him outside of that, this really might be your idol. This really might be the thing you're worshiping. God is really not excited about that at all. It's maybe just a little cleaner than some of these other things. Now, it's okay if this thing right here should be in where God is, in the center of where He is, drawing us to Him. And our image can be in there. Our money, you know, can be in there. And I mean, I can just start throwing all these things can be in where God is. But these people have got a major obsession problem because they're obsessed about the wrong thing. And here we're going to see God's intensity. Here's what happens. Verse 26. So he stood at the entrance of the camp. This is Moses. And he said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. All the Levites rallied to him. Moses comes down, he sees people dancing around, he's going, oh no, this is not good. And he says, all right, whoever really wants to obsess about God, whoever really wants to have God at the center of all they are, and you notice something is short about this. This cannot satisfy. You come to me. And the Levites do. These are the descendants, the tribe of a guy by the name of Levi, also invented tobacco, Garrett, later on. So he comes down, and he says to all these people, okay, and this is the un-American part. And I want you to take a sword, and I want you to walk from one side of the camp where all the people are, and I want you to walk back the other way, and everyone who's within arm, I want you to stab and kill. So walk there, kill, walk back, kill. And this is the part where we go, That's that stinking God of the Bible. See, that's exactly why I can't take the Bible seriously. That's exactly why I can't take that God seriously. You need to understand that when we say that, oftentimes our American elitism comes in, our American spiritual elitism comes in. Because if it's not something we can understand in America today, then somehow it's bad. And we think that we're very elite and very understanding until we see something we don't understand and then we don't like it. Whenever you see this that happens, these kind of things that happen in the Bible, there's one person who never complains. That's the people who are getting stabbed. Very strange. We have a problem with it, but those who were getting stabbed, they never had a hard time with it. Because all the religions of that day understood the intensity of whoever their God was. And understand that there was a God and you are not him, and he would be able to come in and settle things as a part of justice. Even in this country, 100 years ago, if you were in the Navy, you wouldn't have a problem with this because this is a mutiny. This is a mutiny. And mutineers get killed. God had a mutiny on his hands. Everybody could have been wiped out. That would have been complete justice. But God is still sympathetic. And just to send the message, he uses intensity and cranks it up. And there's a portion of Israel that loses their life that day because they worship the wrong thing. And God wants to serve them by giving him his intensity. Giving him his intensity so they can learn and grow. None of them had a hard time with this. None of the ancient people had a hard time with this. People who understand mutinies don't have a hard time with this. You have a hard time with this when you create your own God that doesn't do things like this. In that case, you're really worshiping the God of your own creation, not the actual creator. All of us worship. Every last one of us worships. Every last one of us is becoming like something. You're becoming like something up here or the hundreds and hundreds of other idols or false gods I could put up here. All of us are becoming like something. All of us are becoming like someone. And the thing that we're becoming like is the thing that we obsess over. It's the thing that we worship. And it's the thing that we dance for. What? And I just ask you, what is it you dance for? What is it you dance for? What is it to just causes something to rise up inside of you and it gives you a response? You don't have to think how to worship when you're around the thing that you worship. You just worship. You just kiss him. You just kiss her. You just buy it. You just give adulation to them. God says, the reason your life doesn't work right and the reason why you are becoming somebody who you don't want to be, and the reason why your life is not being what it could be is because you are spinning around in your little ring, your little Lord of the Ring, and you are morphing into something that is not healthy for you. And God invites us, come back. Come back. Or come for the first time. Come and be where I am and have me as your obsession. And you just watch how you will become created to be the person that you've always meant to be. Let's pray. God, there's not a lot of applications today. Other than maybe a big self-awareness application. Father, I ask that you would help us to see what our precious is. What is our precious? And I also pray that once we see what it is, if our precious isn't you, we would turn our gaze toward you and you would become our precious and you would change us and mold us and form us to be who you want us to be. Thanks for your patience, God. I just have to say for me, thank you so much. So many times I could have been in a place where there was somebody with a sword came by and took me out because I was worshiping somebody other than you. Thank you for your empathy and sympathy. And it's in your name that I pray. Amen. Okay, we'll see you next week or at Oktoberfest. Get out of here. See ya.